Omaha Public Radio, KIOS-FM, presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Wednesday, November 15, 2006, for broadcast at this time. Today's guest speaker will be the Interim Chancellor of the University of Nebraska at Omaha, John Christensen. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Chris Allen, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Allen. I'm from the University of Nebraska at Omaha School of Communication, and I have the pleasure of moderating this afternoon's Press Club Forum. Once a month, the Press Club, through its Education Committee, sponsors a forum of interest to club members and to the community at large. The forums are open to everyone. You don't have to be a member of the Press Club to attend. Our guest today is University of Nebraska at Omaha Interim Chancellor John Christensen. Dr. Christensen was appointed Interim Chancellor in September by Nebraska University President J.B. Milliken after Chancellor Nancy Belk stepped down. Dr. Christensen came to UNO in 1978 to teach in the College of Education. He served as chair of the Department of Special Education and Communication Disorders for 12 years. He then became dean of the College of Education, and in 2004 was appointed Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. Dr. Christensen is the first UNO Chancellor to also be an alumnus of the university. He received his bachelor's degree from Dana College, his master's at UNO, and his PhD at Kansas. Since September, Dr. Christensen has been working to restore confidence in UNO, especially its supporters, and he's here today to talk about where UNO is, how things are going, and what the future looks like. Dr. Christensen is going to make some remarks, and then there will be time towards the end for questions. If you'd like to ask a question, what we'd ask you to do is jot them down on the pieces of paper that are located at each table and pass them forward. There will be some people to come around and collect them, and I will ask the questions from up here. Please welcome UNO Interim Chancellor John Christensen.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to provide an update on UNO's progress and what some of our future plans happen to be at this particular point in time. But before I do that, I want to say thanks to this group, to the Press Club, for the generosity that you've shown over the years in terms of providing scholarships, which have allowed many of our outstanding journalism and broadcast students to complete their education. And I think it's equally important that many of the media outlets provide service learning opportunities for our students. They provide opportunities for students to serve as interns, and also those relationships have resulted in students being hired as employees in your organizations, and I appreciate that very much. As a metropolitan university, these relationships truly reflect our mission and goals, and please know that we couldn't do this without you. As I said, I'm pleased to be here. In the last 6 weeks, I've done a number of speaking engagements to talk about where the university's at. I understand the interest that has occurred as a result of the events of this summer, and I've developed kind of a simple-minded format. If you'll bear with me, what I would like to do is share some information with you just briefly and then open the floor to questions, and I'd be available to respond to any kind of question that you may have regarding the university. As I've told many groups that I've visited with, the events of the past several months have really challenged our campus community. I don't want to dwell on summer events, but some mention of these events and what's transpired is certainly warranted. And if you have particular questions about the summer, I'd be happy to respond to those. Essentially, the financial health and future direction of our athletic department was called into question, as was the lack of administrative transparency and utilization of resources. And so for the past 6 to 8 weeks, I've made an effort to seek out citizens and leaders in the community and the region for their counsel. And albeit I've heard the disappointment, the frustration, the concern in many voices, I've also heard genuine and unwavering support for UNO and, frankly, countless offers to help. This has been very heartening from my perspective and clearly signaled that UNO is this community's public university. I have good reason to believe that the UNO we love and serve and care about remains strong and vital. We've never wavered from, in our commitment to the students, the community we serve, or expanding the boundaries of knowledge and scholarship. It's important to recognize that what has happened during the course of the summer is no way pervasive or reflective of our campus culture and values. And I'm going to ask Tim, I brought along for your consideration a punch sheet, if you will, which when I agreed to take the job was really a checklist for me in terms of trying to restore some order with respect to internal control at the institution. And it identifies what we've accomplished in the first 30 days, what we will accomplish by the end of the calendar year, and what we hope to accomplish by the end of the academic year, which occurs in May. And as I mentioned, most of these are internal control issues, but I frankly, as did the campus, felt that it was imperative that we were able to look the public in the eye and assure them that the money that was given, the support that was provided to the university, was being used as intended. And what I can tell you today is that has been accomplished. And I feel very comfortable with the internal control that's in place. I don't think you can ever develop a mousetrap that would allow us to say, honestly, this could never happen again. But I think what we've designed at this point in time with respect to internal control is to develop a situation and an environment in which someone would have to work very, very hard for the events of the past summer or past year to repeat themselves. I'd like to talk for just a few minutes about some of the exciting things that are happening on campus, both in terms of infrastructure and facilities as well as program, and that's really what I'll close with. So let me start by talking about some of the exciting things that are going on with respect to facilities and infrastructure on our campus. Clearly, the development of the Pacific and Center Street campuses as part of the Omaha Mid-City Revitalization and the Exarban Village project has everyone talking. And this property offers space from a UNO perspective, space for future housing, academic and support buildings, as well as competition and intramural fields, which are in desperate need. The development of an additional 400 units of housing on the North Campus, that has been approved. We're in the final stages of deciding whether or not we will build it ourselves or we will have a third party do that for us. Is still under discussion, but we're going to be moving forward with that very quickly. As a matter of fact, I have a kind of a concluding meeting in the next 10 days to address that issue. So that will add 400 additional beds to the North Campus, and we're excited about that because we have a very consistent and large number of students that remain on a waiting list to have housing on campus, and we want to be able to serve those students who want a metropolitan education as well as a metropolitan university experience. We plan on enhancing student life opportunities through a renovation, which has been approved, to the Student Center. That will be beginning in early summer, late spring, early summer of this year. We also have in the works a plan for health, physical education, and recreation facility rehab. Nothing's been done with that building since its inception more than 20 years ago. So we're going to take a swing at that in the near future. And finally, if you haven't had a chance to visit the new library edition, please do so. It's a wonderful addition. The students are raving about it. I think the faculty are very pleased with the outcome. And so take a few minutes, stop by, and visit that addition. Finally, and I've left it to the end because they've been waiting for 10 years or thereabouts, perhaps 11, the faculty in the College of Public Affairs and Community Service, for the first time in their history, will be joined together in a single building. And we are going to start in the spring the renovation of the engineering building, which in the future will house the College of Public Affairs and Community Service. And in addition to that, there will be an addition because since this project was planned, the college has grown enough that the engineering building no longer accommodates our needs. So that's underway as well. On the academic side of the house, the Peter Kiewit Institute has really set the standard for our interface with business and industry as well as government. And probably the most recent addition is Collaboration Sciences Institute. And what's unique about this is IS&T, Information Science and Technology, and the College of Business will provide the leadership for that, but it is a collaborative internal institute. In other words, all of the colleges will participate in activities taking place in this new institute. And there's been a lot of excitement in the business community regarding the beginning of this set of activities. As a metropolitan institution, we're going to continue to value and improve campus diversity in terms of race, in terms of gender, culture, first-generation students. Many of you may not know this, but UNO still has a population of almost 60% of the students which are first-generation college students. And so we feel that this is an important mission for us, we will continue to work hard in those particular areas. You might have noticed recently in U.S. News and World Report, and you can take those rankings for what they are, or however you choose to perceive them, but UNO is in the top tier of the Midwestern region as determined by U.S. News. And that's the first time in our history that we've appeared at that particular level. I think what's remarkable about that is not the rating system, but if you know the formula for doing that, there is a peer evaluation piece in that process, and we score very, very highly with respect to how our peers perceive the academic endeavor on this campus, and I feel good about that. We've also been ranked by the Princeton Review, and the reason I mention that is those rankings are determined by surveys of students and alumni. And so it's really our constituents talking about the type of experience and training that they received at the institution, and I value that kind of input. We're growing our partnerships within the community through a whole variety of meaningful engagement and collaboration. Probably the most noteworthy, the one that's been receiving the most press here recently, is our Service Learning Academy, which has now been nationally recognized for the work they're doing in the community. You may have read about North Omaha, South Omaha, but actually the Academy is participating in service learning activities throughout the community, and we're pleased about that sort of connection with the community. Our continuing our Division II athletic program continues to be highly successful. Our women's soccer team lost in the quarterfinals in Michigan. They were pretty beat up after the double overtime and shootout with Washburn in the regional final, and unfortunately lost 1-0, but it was a terrific year for them. Our football team is going to host a home playoff game, and our hockey team is off to a good start. Swimming's in progress right now, and so this is a program that, although was kind of connected to what happened this summer, really the issues this summer were not about the kids, the student athletes, and what they do, and or the coaches and what they have done so well. What has created a problem is the North Central Conference, which we've been associated with for a number of years, is really kind of in the throes of change. Some would say that the conference is dying, disintegrating before our eyes. Others would suggest that, well, it will rebound, recover, and be reorganized. There's been a lot of angst about, well, should UNO consider Division I, for example, or should we stay in Division II? And if we stay there, where do we go? Well, to that end, I met last week with the 10 presidents of the Mid-America Intercollegiate Athletic Association in Kansas City to explore possible affiliation with that group. If you're not familiar with that, it's primarily Kansas, Missouri. It is exclusively Kansas and Missouri schools, and it's a very strong Division II conference, which is very much like the NCC used to be, and seems to be a nice fit for UNO. And at the same time, I'm going to be on a conference call with the presidents of the North Central Sunday morning to talk about where it is they think they might land with the reorganization that they're involved in. So we're trying to keep our options open. The one option that is not open, that we no longer have to wring our hands about, is that we are not going to be going Division I. It took about 10 minutes of looking at the budget, and I'm not a financial expert by any stretch of the imagination, but it took about 10 minutes of looking at the budget over the last 5 years, and we're going to spend the next 5 years making sure that we have a strong Division II athletic budget, but we are nowhere close to being Division I with respect to financial resources. And so I think that question has been answered. A couple of other things I want you to know about that I think are very important. Our campus, during the budget cuts a few years ago in the early 2000s, lost its learning center, which supported students. That was cut as part of the reduction on campus. And many of us have been concerned about that. And to date, what we've been able to do is now open a writing center to support students. We've opened a speech center, which Chris and his colleagues are involved with, to offer support to students. And we will soon be opening a math and science center to support students as well. So I think we've recovered some of the ground that we lost early on in this new millennium. Finally, and I'm sure most of you are aware of this, and you're probably interested in this, and that is our new College of Communication, Fine Arts, and Media has taken off. It's almost as though it's been there forever. From my perspective, they are up running full speed and doing wonderful things. And I think you're going to hear more and more about this new college as time goes by. I would close by saying I hope to see you on campus, whether it's one of the cultural events or if it's to stop by the library. Stop by my office if you'd like, if it's to attend a program or a speaker or to attend an athletic event of some sort. I would hope you'd get to campus. And also I would ask you to help UNO celebrate its centennial of achievements, which will begin October 2008. That will kick off the centennial anniversary for our institution. It's a great institution. We have a great faculty. About 10,000 of our students are from Douglas and Sarpy County, so we're serving families in this community, and we're serving a very diverse population of students, and I feel very proud to be a part of it, and I'm very privileged to have this opportunity to serve in this capacity, and thank you, and I'll try to respond to questions.
Questions, we have questions. Thank you all, and if you continue to have them, pass them along, and we hope to get to all of them. You're not going to escape the summer bumps. I have several here that relate to some of those problems. One is simply, for those who may not know, can you summarize a little bit of what happened? And when you do that, if you do that, the next question is that NU President J.B. Milliken said all employees would be subject to audits. Are there other audits underway as a result?
In terms of summary of what happened this summer, I'll do the best I can to give you a thumbnail of that. What the campus community found out late spring, early summer, is that the athletic budget had been running a deficit for several years, off and on for 5 years, and that funds from non-academic sources had been used to shore up the budget each year to the tune of a couple of million dollars. And so I think one of the points of concern was, why didn't the university community know that this was going on? Perhaps we could have helped. I know the community felt very much that way. If you would have told us, maybe we could have helped the situation. So that's the backdrop. There was some bleeding that was occurring in the athletic program. The second piece, and the one that perhaps has created the most concern both on and off campus, is that the vice chancellor for administration was utilizing athletic funds to fund other activities for a several year period to the tune of maybe $30,000 to $40,000 a year. These were non-athletic related activities, although they were probably could be characterized as university related activities. The question becomes, should they have come from athletics? And I think the answer to that, in the eyes of the public and certainly in the eyes of the campus, is no. I don't think there's any two ways about it. There has been an internal audit by the university, and no legal action will be taken because there was nothing illegal that took place. One then says, well, what was the big thing? Well, the big thing is probably related to judgment, if nothing else. And propriety of what was taking place. And as a result of that, the vice chancellor and subsequently the chancellor elected to leave the university. And so that's where we are today. And I think that's the best short summary I can give you.
In line with that, University President Milliken said the audit of the vice chancellor's spending was being used to send a message. Has that message been received, and what changes are being implemented in the oversight of expense accounts?
I think the message has been received loud and clear, but what was interesting to me On campus, this may have, and you have the punch list there. What I didn't want to do is come in and put internal controls in place for athletics only, because the worst thing that could have happened is to have another shoe drop someplace at that time. And so what I did is talk to the academic and student services community and said, we want to beef up internal control across the entire campus. The response was absolutely supportive. They said, let's do it. We don't want anyone to have questions. And so do whatever you need to do. We have put in, and you can see there, a number of things, most of which are common sense. I mean, having appropriate people approve appropriate activity that has appropriate documentation. I mean, it's not rocket science here. It's simply a matter of good judgment and ethical practice, and at the very base of it, professionalism. So I think all of that's in place, and I think the message has been heard loud and clear, and I think that the president's actions have actually been very, very useful to all of us who are doing our jobs every day to the best of our ability, and we don't want any clouds of doubt or concern, and so a lot of it has been self-initiated.
There was talk of establishing a whistleblower hotline for employees. Has one been implemented yet?
I can't answer definitively whether the actual implementation has occurred, but it was recommended from our campus to the university. It was recommended by the internal auditor to the university, and what I can't tell you is whether or not the board has acted on it at this particular moment, but I have every reason to believe that that will happen. If it doesn't happen university-wide, we are going to institute that on our campus. The reason people are talking about that is, didn't someone know this was going on, and why wouldn't they have said something? Well, there were, in some cases, people who were three or four levels above someone else asking that individual for a signature, and I suspect there may have been concerns on the part of some that if I don't do this and it's not my place to question this, perhaps I'm going to be looking for a different position. I don't know that, but that's what I could imagine. We don't want that kind of environment. And so if the university doesn't institute that, UNO will.
And I think about the last question in this area. We all know a certain level of spending is required to reach out to people who could benefit the university, but where do we draw the line?
I'm not sure I know where the line is. I think I'm relatively sure I know where it's not. And I'm born and raised in Omaha and spent a good share of my life in Omaha, and I think we have kind of an internal standard in this community as to what seems to be reasonable and what isn't reasonable. And I'm not saying anything new to you, but $1,300 dinners, even if they are for very legitimate promotional purposes, probably won't play well in Omaha. That would be my guess. And so I think what you will see in the future is very judicious, Scandinavian-like oversight of the budget. And Dale can talk to you about what that translates into, but it will be I've been called miserly already, which I felt good about, but it will be more Spartan than it has been in the past.
I apologize. There is one more question in that area. You sort of addressed it already. Is there a culture of spending at UNO that has permitted some of these abuses to occur?
I don't think so. I think most of us have lived our lives at UNO with very lean budgets, people doing their jobs and then stepping up to the plate to do other jobs to make it work. Since we've entered the system, I think we have been an institution that operates on a very thin margin. I do believe that there have been and may be individuals who view the situation differently, and I think we may have an example of someone who felt a level of entitlement or privilege that perhaps should not have been felt. Once again, I would say I think logic and some internal control lead us to make the right decisions, even if we're inclined differently. So I think we're okay at this point.
We're going to change direction a little bit and talk a little bit about the future. We have several questions here that relate to the future. By the way, I should point out that you now owe Dean Gail Baker a quarter because you called it a new college. And anybody who calls it a new college, the College of Communication, Fine Arts, and Media, she's finding them a quarter. So you
tell her I'll pay.
I'll tell her that she can buy a cup of coffee or something on you. What are the current plans for a sports complex on the Chili Greens property? Specifically, what is the likelihood of a hockey arena being relocated there?
That's a question. I actually had somebody in the community say to me, probably 2 weeks into the job, they asked me when the auditorium was going to open. And I said next year. They were disappointed when they found out I was just teasing. What I learned is there's been a lot of talk about that, but there isn't fact one regarding that possibility. And I don't know if it has a future, if it doesn't. So to that end, what I did was put together a study group to find out what the possibilities are, find out the facts. And so Paul Landau and Carol Ebden from the mayor's office are on that committee, Roger Dixon from Metro, Gary Gates from OPPD, Ken West from HDR, our hockey coach, Mike Kemp, and BJ Reed are all conducting a study to find out what is the reality of an arena on the 17 acres south of Center. I can't give you an answer to that today because I don't know, but I'm betting by the beginning of the calendar year we'll have a better picture because I think they're about done with their data collection. The notion there, however, is that in some way the city civic auditorium it will be reaching a point where it's no longer a reasonable business decision to continue to put money in it. So if, in fact, it takes $20 million to bring the Civic Auditorium in 7 or 8 years up to snuff, so to say, would it be better to put that $20 or $25 million in a partnership arena with the university in Mecca on that piece of property and then take down the Civic Auditorium, sell the property for downtown development? I don't know the answer to that, but it really kind of hinges on where the Civic Auditorium is going because I would see a UNO facility as being an alternate to the Quest that and currently the Civic serves in that particular capacity. I will tell you on Chili Greens, and I'm sorry, Chris, to go off here, but on Chili Greens we've laid out HDR has laid out for us a plan for athletic fields. We're in desperate need of space for competition fields as well as intramurals. And I think they have a proposal that has three soccer fields. It has a practice and intramural football space. It has a couple of softball diamonds and a baseball diamond. And it'll be a wonderful complex when it's completed. I think that one is definitely within our reach. The other one is probably further down the road.
We actually answered part of this question talking about the plans for UNO's South Campus. And actually, we really have to talk about, we talk about the North Campus, which is the old one. Then there's the Exarban Campus, which is, I guess, called the South Campus at the moment. And then the South of Center Campus, which is the Chili Greens property and the other property that's being acquired. Overall, what is the plan for development of anything south of Pacific at the moment?
There's been a discussion about how you talk about those campuses. I think it's the greatest discussion that will occur in my academic lifetime. If you're on a metropolitan campus, the opportunity to double the size of your campus is something you don't even think about. I mean, that's just not a reality, and all of a sudden it's a reality for us. So what a great opportunity. There's been discussion about calling those campuses different names, and that'll play out over time. But south of Pacific, we have some property where the PKI is now, immediately south of that, where there are footprints for an academic building and a support building. And then where the soccer field is, there's going to be a hotel going in across from the Scott Conference Center, but we have the space over to where the current Scott housing is, and the plan for that is to have like housing occur there as well. In that particular area. And those are really the major plans for south of Pacific. There is one other small footprint. I think it happens to be a very important one, and it is up on the north end, just immediately south of Pacific, up in the PKI area, and it is a footprint for a daycare early childhood center that might be shared with campus and the community. And I think that warrants very careful consideration. And that's what I know about it at this point.
Did UNO have an opportunity to get what will become Ex-Harbin Village? In other words, was UNO offered a chance at that entire property?
Not to my knowledge. I don't think the Ex-Harbin Trust ever made that available. Now, I'm telling you based on my frame of reference, if that occurred, I never heard about it. So,
what is being planned to aggressively market MAV hockey? And what is the UNO commitment to the Quest Center right now?
Well, there are two. Those are two great questions, and hockey is very important to UNO, and I think it's important to this community. So let me try to answer those. We are currently the Carnes Group, which had Scott Moore involved from Bozell as part of that group, did a preliminary strategic marketing plan for us, which primarily focuses on hockey. What we are doing right now is taking that information. We're using it to develop a RFP, to develop an RFP to put out for a marketing firm to bid on, if you will, to come in and commit 5 years to marketing. And, of course, the big piece will be hockey, but at the same time, it will market all of UNO athletics. So that's the first part of the question. What was the – or maybe that was the second? I talked with David – so I've talked with David Sokol on several occasions, but during one conversation, I asked for the opportunity and ask him to arrange an opportunity to meet with Mecca to talk about our current contract there and was there the possibility for any flexibility in that contract. There's been much talk about that. People say, well, I'll just move back to the Civic Center. Well, let me share a couple of facts with you, which, frankly, I didn't know, and you may not know either. The game day attendance for hockey games in this 10 years is almost flat. So, in other words, the population of folks we had at the Civic Center is very much like the population we have in the Quest right now, slightly over 5,000 people per game. What difference there is that in the Civic, if you didn't have a ticket for Notre Dame and Michigan and Ohio State and those games, if you weren't a season ticket holder, you didn't get in because we would fill all of the available seats. Well, what's changed is in the Quest, there aren't that many people in Omaha to fill it for hockey. Not that many hockey fans in Omaha, I don't believe. And so people have not maintain season tickets because they can come to games, they can pick and choose. So it's more about the space available than anything else. I think we're going to see some flexibility. I hope to Roger Dixon called me, and we're going to have lunch next week. No, the week after Thanksgiving to talk about what the possibilities are. I think we have a good relationship at this particular point in time with them, and we'll continue to try to grow that. I think they're very sensitive to our needs, and I think they will be good partners.
I think I can guess where this question is coming from. What will be the location of the new dorms on the North Campus? Is the land already owned by UNO?
It is. I recently met with the neighbors who were asking the same question, and that's a great group of neighbors, very supportive. But anytime you talk about putting dorms and young people there in numbers, they kind of want to know whereabouts they're going to be located. It's really going to be adjacent to where the housing is now. It's our property. The old Bill Boyle house, which is now social work, is probably going to be utilized as a clubhouse. It'll be refurbished and utilized as a clubhouse. The housing will sit right in that same area. We're going to change the circulation road so that it comes in about to where the stop sign is at the daycare center, and it will turn left and take you then around campus rather than running it all the way around the perimeter, which provides us with more space to set housing in there. We're also looking at a low-profile parking garage, which would be north of that. You know where that piece of large artwork is? I don't know quite what to call it. Metal. What is it? Okay, the Buchanan. You know where that's at? It would sit between there and the house that's immediately to the south of it. There is some parking already there, and it would be a low structure parking garage there. That's being talked about at this particular point in time. And I will tell you, additional parking is being talked about as part of the renovation of the HPER building, where that little parking lot right in front of the HPER building would actually be made into a low-profile parking garage as well. So that's what I know about what's going on.
Let's answer to the next question, so we'll move on. What is UNO's enrollment right now, and where do you see it 10 years from now?
$14,890, give or take a few. We're really at about 15,000 students. And if you think about it, it's 12 and 3. And we've maintained that ratio for quite some time in our history. And by that, I mean it's about 12,000 undergraduate students and about 3,000 either master's level or doctoral students. And that relationship that has existed there has been pretty consistent across time. We really have an unusual situation on our campus. We had 10 years of growth until this year. 10 years of unbelievable growth, as a matter of fact, for a university. And we have flattened out at this point in time. I think we're down about 0.5%. Had we been able to fill our waiting list for housing, which was almost 300 students, we would have had a nice gain, but obviously, we didn't have the beds. So that's where we're at. The interesting situation is we are near academic capacity. We are at capacity, classroom space, and so on during the day. We still have capacity in the evening, albeit we use, and you all know who've been on UNO's campus, it gets used a lot at night between 4:15 and 10. We obviously have some weekend capacity and we have some summer capacity, but in response to the question, UNO's growth will be, in my opinion, directly tied to the capacity that we have available to handle students. If you look at the region's strategic framework, I believe they're looking at 1.5% growth among the campuses. If you plot that out over a three-year period, we would be somewhere around 16,000, 17,000, depending on their starting point. Right now, that concerns me. If we get housing, that will help the concern about physical space for the students, but it doesn't help my concern about adequate classroom space. So I think we're going to have to get more creative. I'll tell you what, I think if this university had the space, sky's the limit. Of fantastic opportunities here. This is a great community. My comment, I was a long time dean and department chair, and when I tried to hire somebody, you know, they would say things like, I really don't want to come to Omaha. I like you, okay, but I'm not coming to Omaha. And I knew if we could get them to Omaha, we'd get them. Because once they get here, the people win them over, whether it be on campus or in the community. And that's what's happening in terms of our university. I mean, students come here and visit. You read the article in the paper, you know. One of the students said, I felt welcome when I was on that campus. I felt like people really wanted me there. And that is the genuine spirit of that campus. It's more family-like. It's a small college, albeit large numbers. It really has a small college feel to it. So I really think we could grow considerably if that were something we wanted to do.
Well, you just mentioned this, but a question here to have you comment on the story in the World Herald about the competition among the universities, the three undergraduate campuses of the NU system for students, and where UNO fits and how that all plays out.
That's a good question. I've received a lot of comment about that. We are not in any kind of competition with other institutions outside the metropolitan area. Frankly, we spend no money outside the literally, that's probably not true, but we spend very little money outside of Omaha. We are responsive to school districts in Grand Island and Columbus and Kearney and so on when they call and ask us if we'll participate. So we do that. But our recruitment is here in the metropolitan area. You would expect that to be the case for a metropolitan institution, and we're very comfortable with that. What has changed in the landscape is everyone and their neighbor is now in Omaha recruiting those same students. If you look at the long-term data, they talk about Nebraska and its high school graduation rates declining in 10 years, and that's absolutely true, but that decline does not occur in the metropolitan area. This is the only place in the state where we will continue to grow more graduates than the rest of the state. So this is going to be a popular place. We have great schools. We have great public and private schools, K-12 schools, preparing kids. They go on and do well. You can nitpick that until the cows come home, but the fact of the matter is these kids go on, they are very successful in higher education, and they are very successful in their careers. And I think that is a statement on the quality of education in this community, and it's only one. So I would be here if I were a recruiter because there are great kids here. They have good values. They're smart, they have good training, and everybody wants a piece of the action. We spend very little money on recruitment, by the way. We spend about one-fifth the money that Lincoln spends for each student recruited. We spend about half of what Kearney spends for each student recruited. They have different environments. They have different agendas, and I don't have an issue with that. We're not in some sort of shootout. We aren't going to be in some sort of shootout. At least at this point in time, we're operating at near capacity. And so I want to be able to serve the students that come to this campus as best we can. I don't want to try to patch things together because we've increased the enrollment by an extra 500. And I'm not going to get involved in that. And I hope that this community wouldn't want to see that happen.
How many students are part-time and how many are night students?
We used to have a population of students that was about 75% non-traditional, and by that, and included in that definition, is some sort of part-time status. In other words, they might be 9 hours if they're an undergraduate or 3 hours if they're a graduate student. That's not been that long ago. That's been 15 years ago. Today, our part-time student population is about a third of our total population. And let me tell you what signals that. We used to, a long time ago when I was a student here, I think the age, the average age on campus was like 28 years old. Think about that for a minute. I mean, I had people in my coursework that were retired and coming back to continue their education and enrichment, and it was a really cool thing. And then we had a very few kind of traditional freshman type, and then there were a bunch of us hanging out. And that's really changing dramatically. Our average age on campus now is down to about 22 and a half years of age. It has dropped precipitously here recently. Not too long ago it was 25. We're 22 and a half right now. What that signals is that we are becoming a more traditional campus to some degree. I don't think we're ever going to lose, and I hope we never lose, the access and opportunity for those who are continuing their education, for non-traditional students, whether they're non-traditional by age or experience or what have you. I would say that we're probably at a point now which is going to reflect what we're going to be like on into the future, where about 25% of our students are really this kind of non-traditional group, and about 75% or more traditional population. That would be my guess.
Are local businesses supporting UNO by making internships available? For instance, we never see the World Herald name an intern from UNO. How is the internship support?
I think it's good. It could be better, but I'm not going to point the finger at the people in the community. I think we need to do a better job of asking and providing opportunities, and we are going to do that. I think we have started to do that. My take on this, and you're getting one opinion here, so my take on this is people have been very receptive when they've been approached with a meaningful experience and plan. We're just not walking in saying, hey, how about letting our students hang out for a while? If it is focused and with intent, I think people will support us. We have a large number of internships right now. In a metropolitan institution, we could easily double that, however, and I think it's our maverick advantage, to be honest with you. Institutions, and I'm not picking on Lincoln, I would never do that, but UNL, for example, can never provide those opportunities. Those kids have to drive a 100-mile round trip to have the same kind of experience that our kids can get to very quickly. And so that interface with the community, business, industry, pick it, that interface is absolutely critical. And what they're finding out is often that is the springboard into your career right here in this community. And I love that because it keeps smart kids at home. It keeps them here in Nebraska.
We have just a few minutes left, and I have a handful of questions here, so I'll just kind of get through them as quickly as we can. Are there plans to restore the ABC breakfast?
Meeting with a community advisory group, including Del Weber, who knows the history of that. We're going to meet right after Thanksgiving to talk about that. By the time I got in the position, no one had done anything. As a matter of fact, if Terry Haney wouldn't have mentioned it to me at a function we were at together, it wouldn't have occurred to me. There were so many other things on the agenda at that time. Some form of that, I think, needs to continue. I don't know what the format is, and so we're going to get community input, find out what the folks in the community think, and then make a decision. But we'll let you know on that certainly by spring.
I don't know if you know the answer to this one. How big is the International Studies program, and how many countries have students in the intensive language program?
I can't answer the second part of it, so it's a bunch. The Alumno program is extremely popular, and there are a significant number of students from all over the world in that particular program. It's been very successful. Our International Studies program is the 22nd largest in the United States, which is incredible, frankly. This is for students enrolled in academic programs and does not include the large student body or group of folks that are taking English as a second language prior to matriculating into a program. So it's a very large program. I'm going to press for this. I'm thinking it's almost 900 students who are academically enrolled right now on campus, which is a significant program. I know that Japan, China, Germany, Latvia, Lithuania, and so on are countries where we have a large numbers of students attending. India has now surged into like the second or third place for students at our institution studying. Yesterday I met with some folks from Innsbruck, Austria, and we are finalizing a collaborative program there and starting to exchange students. So it's a great experience for students, and the only thing I ever worry about is safety when they're going overseas.
And I had another question about that, but I'm gonna move on. Does UNO currently grant any undergraduate degrees in any engineering disciplines? What are your expectations for the future?
Yes. I think it's architectural engineering, but I can't recall. We have one degree program and. The rest are Lincoln's programs, albeit they're located on South Pacific campus. If somebody knows the answer to that, you could help me out instead of just letting me die up here. But I think it's architectural engineering. Is that right, Tim? Thanks, Tim. I'm feeling better already. I'll find that out and let you know. I think we have one degree program that we own, the rest of them are Lincoln owned. And the future of that is unclear to me. There's a lot of politic involved in that, and I don't know how that'll get sorted out. Obviously, the engineering programs probably need to be in the metropolitan community. And they are now. It's a governance issue.
Well, I'd like to thank our guest today, University of Nebraska at Omaha Interim Chancellor John Christensen. And thanks also to KIOS Radio for airing the Omaha Press Club Noon Forums. We don't have a forum in December. We will be back in January. Watch your newsletter for an announcement about that. We are adjourned. And again, let's thank our guest.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's guest speaker has been the Interim Chancellor of the University of Nebraska at Omaha, John Christensen. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Wednesday, November 15th, 2006, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club holds these noontime educational forums each month. If you'd like to attend future forums in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.